morning, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and this, as you know, is one of my favorite times of the week because I am here visiting with you, and also because I have one of my favorite friends with me.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Well, we have a very interesting program tonight. Padre Pio is going to be with us. Richard, in case there are people out there who are not too familiar with his life, can you just give a few words about him?
Yes, Padre Pio was an Italian man born in the late 1880s in a poor farming family. And a family that was illiterate, but was very, you might consider, pious, very religious. And he was drawn to the church, I guess, at a young age, felt very drawn to it. And such a decision was certainly not strange from the context of his family. And he joined the Capuchin monks, the Francis of Assisi discipline, you might say. And so he lived a very pious life, very poor existence. But the interesting phenomenon was that he was very unhealthy, you might say, through much of his life. And that apparent ill health seemed to have been something of a trigger for the emergence of quite a lot of what you might call spiritual experiences. He was able to commune with others on the other side from quite a young age, and as a youngster thought this was perfectly normal. He thought everybody did it. But because of his family context, I don't think they acted to dissuade him of this notion. And so I think it stayed with him pretty much throughout his life. So many young people who experience that I've worked with inevitably have had one parent or another or both say, you know, it's all nonsense, you're making it all up and so on. And so it disappears out of their lives for decades and maybe for the rest of their life if the door is shut hard enough. And so he had a range of experiences, including being best known for displaying what is known as the stigmata, which was, if you like, wounds on his hands and feet which bled, to apparently replicate the wounds of Jesus from being on the cross. And what was interesting about this was that the blood that came forth tended to smell of perfume, of herbal perfume, flowers and so on, which is not exactly what you expect from blood. At one point in his life, he also suffered the wound in the side that Yeshua had experienced. So the phenomena were quite powerful, and he became quite famous because of this, and many people came to see him. And he had a bit of a challenging journey, I guess you'd say, with the Catholic Church, with various individuals trying to discredit him, some popes being supportive, others not. So it was a bit of a tortuous journey in that regard. And so despite his ill health, he lived until the ripe old age of 81. And interestingly, just before his death or on his death, the evidence of those wounds, which were with him really most of his life, disappeared completely. So there were those, as I said, who were trying to discredit him, who said he was using, I think it was carbolic acid to cause the the skin damage and the bleeding and so on, which certainly was not the case, from what I can tell. So a very interesting life, a modern individual who experienced those unusual events, the unfolding of the stigmata, and it occurred in, you know, essentially in last century, so there was lots of awareness within the world of this phenomenon. So that's a quick thumbnail of the man.
Thank you, Richard. So I gather he has a message for us?
Well, we might check what his energy is like first.
Okay.
So, yeah, when I connect with his energy, I find it very interesting. It's essentially an energy of love, very central, quite strong, but very, what I describe as narrow, almost like a narrow centralized slit. Some experiences of love that I experienced from some individuals is almost overwhelming, broad, powerful experience. This is very, you might consider pure, but very narrow, very focused, almost as if it was almost hidden, but not quite. It's very kind of interesting experience. But very clearly love. Nothing else really going on there but that. I wouldn't say that in terms of his energy, there's not what I would associate with great wisdom or any of these kind of things, but simply this, what I would describe as a simple expression of love. Does the man have a message? Well, let's see. As I said to you previously, Richard, I indeed have a message for people, and there are things that I wish to say. Firstly, I would say that my life was in many ways very challenging in terms of the way you would assess a life today. I was poor. I was largely uneducated, and indeed my father traveled to America to earn enough income so that I could undertake the studies required to qualify to become a friar. And so it was a family that was poor but very religious, and so my very strong religious focus that really was with me from my youngest days was not considered so strange, because my family in general carried that focus. Indeed, it had been in my family for several generations, so this focus was not exactly unusual. But the level of my commitment to it, you might almost describe it as a stoicism, a focus, a desire to live a life of almost abstinence in every conceivable sense of living a normal life was so powerful from a very young age. I remember my mother admonishing me for sleeping on a stone floor with a rock as a pillow because I wanted to express that austerity, that abstinence from my earliest childhood. So you can see it was almost as if I was born to the path that I walked. And no one in my lifetime or even since would have considered me to be a great academic. I struggled to learn enough to be able to qualify to be a friar. You might find that difficult to believe, but that was the case. So no one ever considered me to be the great academic or the great wise man in the sense of worldly wise. But I had, you might consider, what you would call spiritual skills that people recognized. Some felt that I could bilocate, and this is not strictly accurate, but what I could do was visualize other locations. I could see places and people that were not where I was, you might consider. So my powers of meditation, I guess you would call them today, were very great indeed. And as I mentioned, I was able to communicate with beings on the other side, and more accurately, to commune with them from a very young age. You might consider I lived a largely inner life, though the life that I lived inevitably demanded some outer worldly activities. I had responsibilities as a friar and beyond to give mass and various other services, to hear confessions and so on. So all those things were a requirement. And in a sense, I was drawn to give to people in this manner, not because, as I say, I was some well-educated wise man, but rather I simply came from that very basic tenet of love and simplicity of life. So these would be the elements you might consider that you would associate with me. And I was very aware of the politics that were, you might consider, being conducted in relation to me within the Catholic Church. There were those who worked very hard to discredit me, but that was very difficult because there was no evidence of my having created the stigmata by some external effort. And indeed, people who knew me understood that whilst I was willing to suffer as Christ, as I would know him, had suffered as I understood it, and I will admit I viewed things through the lens of the Catholic Church at that time because that was the only thing that I knew, and I was drawn to replicate that suffering, but I did not want the stigmata. I willed them away at one point for several years, only to see them return. And I wore gloves for much of my time to hide them, but it really was impossible to hide them completely, and the word got out. So it was not something that I promoted for my own self-aggrandizement, you might say, but rather it was a phenomenon that was cast upon me for whatever purpose, and I certainly did not understand the purpose in that lifetime, just as I anticipate others that have experienced this have similarly sorted out in this manner, but have found it in their experience. And some take the expression of the stigmata as evidence of the truth of the sacrifice of Yeshua, as you would call him, on the cross. But I know better now. And simply, it was an acknowledgement through my understandings and so on to a commitment of a life of what I would call piety and a life of going within. It is very clear to me that although Yeshua, I now understand, did not want for anything because his father-in-law in particular, in Joseph of Arimathea, was a very wealthy man. And so he and Mary Magdalene did not want for anything in truth. But nevertheless, he was not a man who outwardly displayed any of this. He lived, at its essence, a very simple life, as was evidenced by his ministry. Of course, he and I were very different in the sense that he was a highly educated, highly intelligent man with great skills and gifts that he had studied long and hard to develop. Whereas, in essence, what I was displaying was, as I say, essentially thrust upon me. It was not something that I sought out in any manner whatsoever. But it was a very real phenomenon. And in a sense, one of the things that it did was brought hope to people. Quite a lot of the time in which I lived was a difficult time. As you would appreciate, there were two world wars in my lifetime, and they were times of great difficulty in Europe, as you might understand. Most of you listening to this call were almost certainly not alive in that time. But I will say to you that it was a very difficult time. Many, many, many people lost their lives, and many who survived had their lives completely destroyed. And so people were reaching out for some kind of hope, some kind of sign that there was something more than this terrible experience of war and loss that had been the lot of so many in that period. And so I realize now that in ways I was giving people hope, that there was more than just this difficult existence. As I say, I understand that my display, if you will, was occurring within the context of the Catholic Church, which I certainly understand its limitations rather more now than I did when I was alive, though they were in many ways evident to me because of the efforts to discredit me and the disbelief with which I was treated by the highest echelons of that church. And so I realized that not all was as it was presented to be, but nevertheless, that was all there was as far as I was concerned at that time. And that life, that world of the church, in particular of my order, represented home to me, represented my life, the context for my life. And in that, I valued and appreciated what it provided to me. But I see that within that context and within, you might consider, the power of the faith that so many people had in the Catholic Church, in particular in Italy and other parts of Europe, my display was a powerful sign, as I said, that there was more to life than just these challenges and difficulties and abuses that had been so manifest during that period. So these are my thoughts about the time in which I lived and what my life represented. I, perhaps you can understand, was a humble man who really was not seeking out anything for my own benefit, but rather to live a life in the context of the example of Jesus and to provide some solace and some comfort to my fellow man and woman. This was my focus, and as I reflect upon my life, I feel I achieved those objectives. I feel I satisfied the measures that you might consider were set by my soul when it came forth to incarnate in that lifetime. I am satisfied that those objectives were achieved, even though I didn't understand them fully as it unfolded in my life. I have to say it is not a life that I would wish upon anybody else, and yet, even with all its difficulties, I accepted it and I chose it with great commitment and great love. So these are my thoughts, as I say, from my lifetime. And I, of course, cannot come forth in this time on a vehicle such as this radio show without making some comment about the time in which you all find yourselves. Because this time, I now understand, is a time of great transition in the world, a great transition from the forces, if you will, that were responsible for creating those two world wars that I mentioned and so much other suffering and destruction in your world. a transition from the time when they, you might say, carry the power to a time when they will be disempowered. Disempowered because a new consciousness has come forth and is being activated as I speak to you. Activated through that process of rejuvenation, the recovery of the perfect human physical form as it existed before that event that you call the fall in Atlantis. That exquisite expression of the human will come forth, a form which does not age as the current form does, that does not carry the limitations of the current form, where it breaks down with time or carries illness or injury or malformation of one sort or another. Imperfection might perhaps be a better word. Because this is a relatively recent phenomenon, a few thousand years is all. And all of this will be swept aside, and those who wish to move beyond the grasp of those dark ones, as I would call them, that those who choose this path will simply step out of their grasp. And it is a wondrous thing to be aware of now, and in my own way to assist where I can to see this come forth, because I see this in many ways as being the extension in a powerful way of what I was trying to do to bring comfort and solace to my fellow man. And this indeed will do this on an extraordinary level. And so I watch the struggles as they continue in your world, as those dark forces continue to tighten their grip. But I also witness the threads emerging of this time of change. And my friends, it will be upon you very soon. And so it is.
Thank you so much, Richard. And thank you also to Padre Pio for coming forth with that information, bringing us hope. Does your monad have other fingers of consciousness in Earth at this time?
It is an interesting question you ask, because indeed my monad has a finger of consciousness that is present in your world, and it is one that you already know about. I validate the connection that you are aware of. And as you also understand, I come from a cherubim monad. And so it is one of the reasons I pay a great deal of interest to the unfolding of events in your time.
Thank you so much. Give us some thoughts of these other fingers of consciousness that are in Earth presently. They will be, those individuals will be working for the change that's to occur here on Earth?
There is only one, and as you know, that individual does work for this change. Indeed, as you understand it, all incarnated cherubim angels, as they are, that have come forth are here to work upon this on one level or another, some more directly, some less so, some aware of this transition, some not. But inevitably on some level and in some form, they are here to assist with this change.
We see the organization of the Catholic Church that you love so much as falling apart soon. Would you agree with that?
Some speak of the demise of the Catholic Church in the time of change, and in a sense that is true, though it will, you might say, come asunder as those who are making the transition, if you will, to the new consciousness, make that transition, because you cannot truly understand the truth of what it is to be a human being and continue to allow an organization to insert itself between you and your connection with your creator. Indeed, if you examine my life and the story I told of it, you can see that really the essence of my life was built upon that essential connection. It really did not rely upon the church itself to foster that connection, but rather the church provided a framework for my life. And yes, I certainly, you might consider, accepted the church's view of who and what Jesus was. And that is a view that I have changed somewhat. So I certainly do not have the Catholic Church on some kind of pedestal these days, because I understand it so much better from this side. And I would also say that the fundamental fabric of the church I do not see coming apart, but rather those who you might consider step across into this new consciousness will leave it behind and see it for what it is. So in that sense, it will come apart, in the sense that many who take themselves to be Christians will make this transition and hence see things from a completely different perspective as a result. And in doing so, there is no place for religion of any type, whether it be the Catholic Church or any other form of Christianity or Buddhism or Islam or whatever choice you make. They will all wash away.
Thank you. You carried great pain in your lifetime, and there are others today who are in great pain. Can you give some thoughts as to how these individuals can bear their pain and move forward?
Pain in anybody's experience is always a difficult thing to deal with. Unless you are experiencing that pain, that individual's pain, you cannot understand, truly understand what they are going through. Even if you have or have had your own pain, it is never the same as somebody else's. It is a unique experience. And unless you have experienced it, you do not understand how debilitating pain can be. And my most powerful recommendation is to remember the truth of who and what you are. You are, as it is said in your world, a spiritual being on a human journey. And in terms of the journey of the soul, the years spent in that life are but fleeting. And in any case, those who are likely to hear my words will almost certainly be amongst those making this transition, which is not far into your future. So I encourage you to engender a sense of hope and optimism that what you are experiencing is but a passing phenomenon, that it will be lifted from you as these changes come forth.
Thank you. Lou from New Jersey is on line one. Lou, can we have your question, please?
Hi, Carolyn, Richard, and Project Pia. My question is, as a cherubim, I am feeling very, very guided at this time, but I am not sure who got guided where. I have been guided to a particular family that is playing a very, very large role on about in this transition at this time, and I wanted to see if Padre Pia might have some insight on, what role that is, why I've been guided there.
Richard, do you understand the question?
I believe I do.
Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure I did.
There are many threads to the unfolding journey at this time. And the roles that the cherubim are playing are many and varied. And I cannot say for certain that the role that you feel this family is playing will necessarily play out in the way that you expect, because in essence their activities inevitably relate to the current consciousness. Now, they may play a role to disarm some of the forces at work, in a sense, in your world. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing, but truly you need to understand that the essence of what is coming forth is a new consciousness that will not, if you will, arise directly from this current consciousness. So it's important to make that distinction. This is not in any way meant to be a criticism of what you feel drawn to do. You should always, whether you are a cherubim or whether you are anyone else, you should always follow what you feel drawn to do. It may not turn out the way you expect. That is not a bad thing. You should always do what you feel you are drawn to do, because if nothing else, it will carry lessons for you. And one of the key things in following what you are feel drawn to do is to not lock yourself into what the outcome is going to look like, because you don't know. You don't know what the outcome is going to look like. No one really ever does. That is the nature of the consciousness in which you find yourselves. But what you should do is, when you are drawn to something, to firstly feel your way into it, then if it feels right, keep going with it. And there will inevitably be, at the very least, some lessons in it for you. So the most important thing for you to take from this, Lou, is to follow what you feel is right to do above all else, because at the very least, it will carry some understanding, some learnings for you. It may not produce the magical outcomes that you dream of. That is not so important, actually. What is important is your own experience and personal growth. Always see that as, above all else, the focus of the human life.
Thank you, Lou, for your question. And for the answer, we thank you, too. I'd like to turn our attention to, you might call, the warring state in the world. So many individuals are fighting others, and there is so much tragedy today. Can our guests give us some idea as to when this might drop away, or do we have to wait till the new consciousness is implemented?
It is my opinion that this warring state, as you call it, will continue for some considerable time. Indeed, it will remain part of this consciousness that is currently in place, because it is the nature of those who control it to drive these efforts. The issue is not the transformation of this current consciousness, but rather the emergence of one beside it that offers an alternative, that humanity, to the level they choose it, on an individual level, can step out of the current experience. In doing so, they will step out of the grip of these dark ones that are driving this agenda, but they will not stop driving their agenda. In my opinion, this warlike state, as you call it, will continue in this consciousness while this consciousness continues to exist.
Thank you. There is so much pain and tribulation in society today. Is there any hope of that dropping away before the new consciousness is in place?
In many ways, you are asking the same question, but in a different way. The consciousness in which you find yourselves has so many threads that are being manipulated by these dark forces, as I would call them. the war that you referred to is but one thread of this. They are also responsible for the famines that you see, the starvation, the lack that is present in so many of these countries, particularly in countries such as Africa, but elsewhere. Meanwhile, those forces rape those countries for their mineral resources. That is their nature, and they've been playing this game for hundreds of years. It is not something which is new. And so they will continue down that path. They are responsible for these efforts to vaccinate everyone, to poison many of humanity through vaccination. There are so many threads to this, it is difficult to cover them all. So these things contribute to the despair that you speak of. War is but a small part of this difficult consciousness. And frankly, I do not see this difficult consciousness easing up in any manner. It is a consciousness that the dark have taken in their grip. And there are groups who believe they can change this from within. And I applaud those individuals because they are, as I did in my life, generating hope for those who connect with their work. But when these people are presented with an alternative that they can simply step across, and others who wish to leave behind these difficulties can also step across from, they will be amongst the first to take that opportunity because it represents what they are trying to create. And they, in large measure, underestimate the power of what it is they are up against. I acknowledge that many of these people are fearless in their outlook and their approach, and I honor that stance. Fear is such a powerful tool that is used to demean and to disempower humanity in this consciousness. And so these individuals are in many cases like a beacon because they are fearless and in some cases highly articulate in representing an alternative. But ultimately they are trying to build on foundations of sand because this consciousness has been so carefully crafted and manipulated by these forces that to build something new within it is, I consider, an impossible task.
Thank you so much for your answers. And I have one more question, and that has to do with our food sources. They have been manipulated on so many different levels, and yet we have to eat. Is there anything that people can do as they eat the food to work on negating the negative effect that these problems cause in the body?
It's a very interesting question that you ask. Of course, it is good where you can to seek out organic food, to seek out food that has been grown in places that have not been impacted by the particulates being sprayed in the sky, for example. But ultimately, that is getting more and more difficult to do in some areas of the world in particular, more than others. So eating the best food that you can find and single ingredient foods is certainly a very important thing to do because those packaged foods in general that come to you contain things which are not healthy for the body. Sugar and refined wheat flour, for example, are a couple of obvious examples, but there are many, many others that are added to the food supply where it is.
Thank you so much for your answer. I certainly do appreciate it. And we appreciate you coming and communicating with us tonight. Again, thank you, dear one. You have given us much to think about. Richard, thank you for bringing Padre Pio to light here. And we have a little bit of time. And I would like for you, if you wish, to discuss some things that we have on our drawing board that you might be able to bring to people's attention.
Well, we've had a couple of calls now with Yeshua, where he has come forth and is answering the questions that have been sent in by the attendees to those calls. And we've had two of those now with quite interesting questions in many cases, and I think some fascinating answers, some answers that many would not have perhaps expected. So the information that's coming forth in those is quite fascinating. As I said, we've had two. There will certainly be at least one more. I'm not sure how many there will be because it depends on the questions we receive, but certainly there are enough there for another call, maybe two more. So I'm not sure how long the series will run, but I do think there'll be another couple, and we're holding them about monthly. And so if you are interested in having, you have questions that you feel answers from Yeshua may help you with, then I encourage you to participate in those calls, or indeed order the original couple of calls if you haven't already, to experience those amazing answers coming forth from Yeshua.
I have been very impressed, Richard, with the type of questions that people have been asking. They're very deep. People are out there thinking.
Yes. So that's the first thing. I'm drawn, Carolyn, to go back to Padre Pio because his last answer was cut off.
All right.
So I just want to see if he has anything that he wants to add before we finish up. I was talking about the complexity of the interference within this consciousness, and I would simply say in finishing up that the answer does not lie within this current consciousness, but indeed the answer lies in stepping out of it. And that door will be opened quite soon for those of humanity that wish to make that choice. It is why the cherubim are here. It is why the two of you are here too. You might consider open this door for humanity to step through. And at the moment, it's largely hidden from the world, but that will change very soon as it begins to unfold. There have been many steps on this journey that are invisible to most, but you're about to enter that period when what you are all about will become very visible to the world. So this is my final message to you tonight.
Thank you so much. I would like to mention, Richard, that we have been taking information from the Cathars, very similar to information that we received from the Templars.
Indeed.
And for those who have not ordered their Templar video, I would like to suggest that you do that because there is really incredible information on there.
Truly. And the Cathars are very interesting because if you look at history, the first piece of history one tends to be aware of is the destruction of the Cathars through the Albigensian Crusades, driven primarily by the Catholic Church, you might consider, but really executed by the Knights of Northern France, who basically came into the south and destroyed southern France. And if you go to southern France, you see the castles, the chateaus, which are ruins these days, so many of them, which were destroyed back then and looted and pillaged. Much of the wealth of France, in fact, was in the south in those times. So there was much more went on during that time than simply the destruction of the Cathars. And that the destruction of the Cathars is recorded in history as ending with their incineration at Montségur. Am I right, Carolyn? Is it at
Montségur?
Yes, where they finally surrendered. And really, if you think about that, you and their willingness to suffer that fate, which was in a sense a chosen fate that they were willing to go through, it tells you a lot about their sense of who and what they were. And if you look at the way that people talk about the Cathars today, some of them see them as being very dark. They talk about Gnosticism as being connected to many of these sort of dark secret societies that are around, which is a complete distortion of things. These individuals so often don't understand the distinction between the secret societies of the light and of the dark. And again, when people are looking from where the Cathars came from, they go looking for elsewhere in Europe or other parts of the world that they may have come forth with those beliefs and understandings, whereas in fact they were essentially the direct descendants of the Essenes that had moved to that era of the world, in fact prior to the time of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And as you may understand, Yeshua and Mary Magdalene moved to that area of the world after the crucifixion and died there. So the story of the Cathars is actually quite a story and very, very different from what is held in our history, just as the story of the Templars was. So it's quite interesting material.
And there is a mystery about all of that, because there were a group of Cathars that went down the back of Montségur and took with them artifacts. That is another story.
Well, some Cathars, but also Templars. They were quite close, those two groups, because
yes,
they carried similar understandings of who Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were, and also what it meant to be a human being.
Well, Richard, we've come to the end of another program.
Indeed.
And I would like to thank you and Padre Pio and those at BBS Radio that take care of us, and all of you for tuning in and listening.
Indeed.
God bless all of you.
Thank you all, and we will be doing a replay next week, because I will be in Australia for a couple of Saturdays as I do my 3-monthly trip back to Australia. So I will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Bye for now.
Goodbye for now.